Thank you. Be seated.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in American Motors versus Fowles.
May it please the court, Mr. Rochford, and Mr. Corsair, the law is an argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Bach will present the rebuttal.
May it please the court. A workers' compensation claimant cannot pursue her extra contractual claims in the courts without first having exhausted her administrative remedies as to each claim for benefits over which the commission normally has exclusive jurisdiction if the tort causes of action are related to the deprivation of those benefits. Here, Ms. Fodge has claimed that in her suit, she only seeks relief for separate injuries which are meaningfully distinct from her claim for indemnity and medical benefits under the statute. However, a plain reading of the petition in the trial court reveals that all of the claims and causes of action arise out of the same grievance, that is, a wrongful deprivation of primarily medical benefits, but also some indemnity benefits. Further careful reading of the petition reveals that Ms. Fodge seeks statutory benefits, which are ordinarily within the province of the commission to award. The petition sets forth 28 separate acts of wrongful conduct on the part of the carrier. And then, after detailing those denials, they're all denials and delays of indemnity and medical benefits, and after doing so, it seeks the following damages at page 9, paragraph 6. Quote, as a proximate result of the tortious conduct of defendants, your plaintiff was damaged in that your plaintiff suffered not only the loss of those sums due and owing under the workers' compensation insurance policy, but also suffered the following additional damages, and then among the additional damages that are set forth, it lists loss of wages in the past.
Hasn't there already been a determination by the commission?
The only thing that was determined by the commission was that Ms. Fodge sustained a compensable injury in the course and scope of employment, and that as a consequence of that, she suffered a period of disability of 20 days.
And so you're saying that she would have to go back to the commission to pursue these further claims. Why would these claims not be subsumed within her initial appearance at the commission?
Because the commission has the authority to decide entitlement to benefits. The commission, there has to be some relationship between the benefits, which are the basis of the cause of action in tort, to a determination as to those benefits at the administrative agency. You can't go to the commission on, did I suffer injury in course and scope, have the agency say yes, the commission say yes, and then file a bad faith lawsuit and say, you know what, you didn't pay me enough benefits, you didn't pay me based on the proper average weekly wage, you didn't pay me for the appropriate period of disability. The commission has the authority to decide that, and Ms. Fodge must go back to the commission to have them decide whether or not she's entitled to additional benefits based on a longer period of disability or based upon a different average weekly wage.
What about the claims that are asserted here that don't fall within, at least what I'm uncertain about, whether or not the commission has the authority to award, such as damages for, let's say, damage to her credit rating? Does the commission have the authority to enter an award or to decline an award for a claim like that?
No, Your Honor. The commission does not have the authority to grant that.
Why then could she not go ahead and pursue those types of claims?
The commission has the authority to determine her entitlement to benefits. The claim in the lawsuit is that the deprivation of those benefits resulted in me having this damage to credit reputation or perhaps a worsening of the physical condition. Those are dependent upon a determination by the commission that she was entitled to those benefits. And as you know, primarily we're talking about medical benefits here. The commission needs to have determined that Ms. Fodge was entitled to a particular medical treatment or payment for a particular medical service before she can pursue that in the courts. And while the commission doesn't have the authority to grant the relief in tort, damage to credit reputation, worsening of physical condition, they clearly have the authority given to them by the legislature to make that determination as to the entitlement to benefits.
What about, in this particular instance, since the commission ended up awarding her benefits for the 20-day period of temporary disability, if after that was concluded, the carrier did not pay the benefits that the commission awarded her, what is her remedy then? Does she go back to the commission, or does she go to court to enforce the award?
She certainly can go under the Act, seek judicial enforcement of the order. There's a whole different scheme for that. As to the tort claim,
I'm looking at the underlying benefits claim. One of her allegations is underpaying the temporary income benefits, and it's hard to tell from that allegation if that means she didn't think she got enough temporary income benefits in the first instance, or whether or not she's saying that the carrier didn't pay what the commission said they were supposed to pay.
I agree that the pleadings are somewhat vague and difficult to read, but I will say this. An underpayment of temporary income benefits. Temporary income benefits are based upon average weekly wage.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying, let's say that what she is complaining about is, I was supposed to get 20 days, and here's how much I was supposed to get. I got a check for $1,000 less than what the commission said. Does she need to seek a judicial remedy at that point in time for enforcement of the commission's award, or does she go back to the commission at that point in time if there has been an underpayment of the award, let's say?
She still has to go back to the commission because part of the underpayment of the award is what is your average weekly wage and also what is the period of disability. The commission in this particular instance found that the period of disability based on stipulation was 20 days. The carrier paid that.
Let's say they paid her for 18 days instead of 20. I mean, that's the issue I'm trying to get to. Where does she go with that complaint?
If it's 18 days, then I think she has her whole enforcement action under the statute, and then she
and that's
can.
That's in the courts.
If the
is that
that's a trial court.
That's in the trial court.
Court.
Okay.
That's
similarly, she has a claim in terms of trying to fit what goes under the Act and what the Commission has the exclusive jurisdiction to decide versus what does not. She also has a claim about delaying the mailing of temporary income benefits to your plaintiff. I don't see anything in the Act that indicates that conduct as well would be adjudicated by the Commission, and doesn't her remedy there lie in the courts as well?
I will concede, Your Honor, as to that sole claim,
right,
the delay in mailing of the check, that she has exhausted her administrative remedies.
Okay, so that one does belong in court.
That one belongs in the court. Okay. I do not believe, going back to the underpayment, that she has to go back and exhaust as to issues of the period of disability and the amount of compensation benefits based on average weekly wage. That is the sole.
Even if she already has an award?
Yes.
She still goes back to the commission again to relitigate the same thing over again?
It's not the same thing. The only thing that she litigated was she injured in the course
right.
of scope, and was she did she suffer a period of disability? She did not litigate.
Oh, I see what you mean. I'm sorry, I was having a hard time understanding. I see now.
If okay. she's claiming that she had a period of disability longer than the 20 days, she's got to go back to the commission. If she's claiming
right.
that the carrier, after the commission award, American Motorists paid benefits for a period of disability, the 20-day period of disability based on what it deemed the average weekly wage to be, therefore the amount of the temporary income benefits. If she had a problem with that, she needed to go back to the commission.
How about her surgery that she claims was delayed to 2000? Did the commission ever pass on surgery?
No, Your Honor, for good reason. The issue about surgery did not come up until after dismissal of this case by the trial court for lack of jurisdiction. I'm not sure of the precise date. I think the parties are all in agreement. It's in the briefing that it was well after the dismissal.
But she could bring another action if the need for surgery arose out of this injury, I suppose. It wasn't manifested until after the time that the underlying case was
She gone. Could bring, but whether it's, supposedly in a separate action. it's well outside the record, and I don't want to go there. I think that's not what she has alleged outside of the record in the brief on the merits is not actually, in fact, what happened, but it could conceivably be a basis for a different lawsuit.
How much bad faith litigation is there against compensation carriers?
I can't quote you numbers, Your Honor. I simply would refer the court to the amicus brief filed by the Texas Workers' Compensation Insurance Fund. The fund, I think, undeniably writes more workers' compensation insurance in Texas than probably any other carrier, certainly more than American Motors. They've given you some numbers based on reports filed with the state as to the sheer volume of those claims. I think that there probably are quite a few bad faith lawsuits filed in the courts based on an alleged wrongful deprivation of benefits under the statute. What I would point out to the court, what is missing, what is lacking in the lawsuit that was filed here, is a claim that American Motors committed some tortious conduct which is completely unrelated to determination of entitlement to benefits by the commission. It is an example of slander. Everything she's alleged is related to the deprivation of benefits. I think if there had been something like a slander, you slandered me in the claims process, certainly the commission doesn't have authority to pass on that and
let me
go to the courts.
How do you get to a judgment on the extra contractual claims before the Workers' Compensation Board has rendered a judgment on the comp claim? It's hard for me to imagine that administrative process is supposed to be more speedy and efficient and that sort of thing can actually take longer than trying a deceptive trade practices or a bad faith claim. How does this happen?
I think the statute does have speedy. I mean, the statute is very detailed as to the time requirements. I think that what happens in most cases is these claimants fail to exhaust the remedies. They don't go to the commission and
begin
the process.
Well, this one had already gone to the commission. They already had temporary. Didn't they have?
Only as to did she suffer injury in course and scope, and did she suffer any period of disability, not as to entitlement to any of the medical benefits for which she claims we committed bad faith by not paying or denying authorization for.
When a plaintiff fails to exhaust administrative remedies in this circumstance, what is the appropriate procedural mechanism that should be triggered in the trial court, dismissal or abatement? And if it is one or both, under what circumstances would each be used?
I think it can be both. I think it depends upon, certainly within the discretion of the court, but I think it depends upon the facts of any given case. In this case, if the time for exhausting administrative remedies has passed, then certainly dismissal would be appropriate. In this case, she had 1 year from the date of the service of a medical service to bring the dispute to the Division of Medical Review. That time had certainly passed by the time of dismissal. The lawsuit was filed in 1995. The dismissal was in March of 97. Our affidavit makes clear that no attempt was made to exhaust. Her time had passed. Dismissal would be appropriate. And I think the courts that have addressed this issue have recognized that if your time for pursuing your administrative remedies has passed, dismissal is appropriate.
But if the time has not passed, then abatement is appropriate?
Abatement could be appropriate, yes. One last thing that I would mention is that it is our position that entitlement to benefits is a predicate to a bad faith cause of action that is based on a wrongful deprivation of benefits. This court has said in Stoker that as a general rule, you can't have a claim for bad faith when an insurer has promptly denied a claim that is not covered. Stoker clearly is not a bad faith workers' comp case. It is a UM case. But there, this court applied the reasoning in Miranda and said, you can't have a bad faith cause of action where there's no coverage because the first prong of the Miranda test is not met. The first prong of the Miranda test is there an absence of a reasonable basis? So now under Miranda, Giles, I guess it's, is liability reasonably clear? No, it's not clear if benefits are not owed. Thus, there must be a determination by the commission that benefits are owed before you can have a bad faith cause of action for deprivation of those benefits.
But some of her claims are unrelated to the bad faith claim.
I don't believe that they are here, Your Honor. I think all of the claims in this lawsuit are related to the deprivation of her workers' comp benefits. Again, you know, this, you know, slandering me in the process of adjusting my claim by telling one of my medical providers that we're not going to authorize treatment because she's a malingerer and she's a professional claimant, and we're not going to pay for her prescriptions that you've given her for narcotic medication because she's a drug dealer and she saw them on the street. That slander, that tort, clearly is unrelated. Here, all of her claims are, you deprived me of benefits to which I was entitled under the Act. They're related, they're dependent upon, they're related to her entitlement to benefits, exhaustion needed to her at the commission.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May I please the court? Mr. Richard G. Banner, Jr. will present argument for this matter.
Please the court. We have, there's two claims, there's two standards. That's the easiest way to view the situation. You have the comp claim. The standard for the comp claim is the rules and the Act. You have the bad faith claim. The standard over there is Giles. When it is reasonably clear the benefits are owed, they should be paid. There's also a duty to investigate. They have to investigate, then they have to pay when it's reasonably clear. If you look at the procedure to reconcile both of these, the comp claim and the bad faith claim, is this. You start, you do the investigation. If your investigation concludes that it's reasonably clear it should be paid, you pay it. And you do not have to go to the commission. Not every claim that arises has to go to the commission. The commission, the rules, the Act, they are there in the event that there is a truly legitimate dispute over a claim.
Well, it sounds like, though, from this case, though, many of the claims that she's making relate to medical benefits. The medical benefits issues were apparently never taken to the commission if there was a dispute over what medical benefits she thought she was entitled to.
I was not involved in the comp proceeding, so I don't know that much about it.
Don't you agree, though, with respect to all these allegations relating to the failure to pay for medical benefits and treatment, that all of those must have gone to the commission first before they could be the subject of an extra a proceeding outside the commission?
All right. Let me answer your question and explain to you about the petition. The petition includes a claim for punitive damages. In order to get punitive damages, you have to show the egregious conduct.
Well, I understand, but before we can even get to that,
right,
we have to look at the first question in terms of the jurisdictional issues that have been raised here before you can ever decide whether anyone's entitled to punitive damages. And my question to you is, all of these allegations that relate to the failure to pay medical benefits, none of those went to the commission. Is that correct?
No, they did not.
And weren't they required to go to the commission?
What she was seeking was medical treatment.
That's right. Denying medical treatment to your plaintiff, refusing to pay or timely pay health care providers, cutting off medical benefits, refusing to authorize treatment, cutting off doctor's visits.
All right.
Why aren't those matters that are exclusively within the jurisdiction of the commission and that she must exhaust her administrative remedies with respect to before they could be in any way the subject of a claim for the conduct of the insurance company in a judicial proceeding?
Okay. Some of those should be presented to the commission, and I agree with you on that. I think they should be presented
to the commission. Which medical benefits claim should not be? Which of the allegations with respect to medical benefits should not have gone to the commission? Any of them?
Well, rather than focusing on the conduct, and let me try to answer your question this way.
Mm-hmm.
Don't focus on the conduct. Focus on the remedy. That's the mistake.
But I don't get to a remedy if the court doesn't have jurisdiction over it at this point in time.
Well, I think you have to look.
If jurisdiction lies in the commission, then I don't get to a remedy.
Well, but you have to look at what is being requested. And what she is asking for, she's asking for the enhanced injury because of the delay in the medical treatment. She's asking for lost wages because of the fact she wasn't able to work for a long period of time because she couldn't go back to work. She's asking for damages as a result of the injury to her credit reputation.
Why isn't the lost wages claim as well something that should have been dealt with by the commission? I mean, if she has a period of disability, then that's what the compact is designed to be able to protect her from, is to compensate her for the period of her disability.
She's not asking, and there's a distinction here, and I'm not making it clear, but she's not asking for comp benefits. She's not asking for indemnity benefits. She's not asking for 70% of her average weekly wage. What she is saying to you is...
So she doesn't want the comp law to apply to her now.
No, what she's saying to you is that I was hurt. I was injured. I couldn't get treatment. I suffered injuries as a result of the way the claim was handled. And as a result of the way the claim was handled, I was unable to return to work in 6 months, as would normally be the case. I've been out for a much longer period of time. She's also saying that I've suffered a damage to my credit reputation. I've been forced to go through a long period of mental anguish.
Let me ask you this. If it's determined that she is not entitled to those comp benefits, doesn't it follow then that she, in reality, suffered no damage to her credit rating because she didn't suffer any damages resulting from not getting the medical benefits because she wasn't entitled to them?
No, I don't think, and it goes back to the distinction between the two claims. You look at the comp claim, you got the procedure over there, and you have to exhaust your medical.
Let me ask you this. Let's put it this way. Let's assume she loses on her comp claim.
Okay.
Flat out. Regardless of whether or not she has to go back to the commission or does it in court, she loses on her comp claim. She's told flat out, look, you're not entitled to these benefits.
Okay.
How does she then maintain damages, say, for loss of her credit rating?
All right, the way she does that is this. You have a procedure, the Comp Act, and when you're asking for benefits, you go through that procedure, the Act, the rules. When you are hurt by the method and the manner in which the claim was handled, the bad faith claim, you got a different standard. What the administrative determination is over here doesn't make any difference, because that's one person, a benefit review officer, who's making the decision based on everything that's been thrown at him, and he says, I think it's non-compensable. That's a different situation. Over here, on the other hand, when you have the bad faith claim, you have a different standard. When it's reasonably clear, the Giles standard, the carrier has a duty and an obligation to apply the Giles standard.
If it's not compensable, how does it become reasonably clear that it's either?
Because they're not asking for tips. They're asking for the damages that arise out of the way the claim was handled.
But if she's not entitled to recover, she's not entitled to any damages. That's what the court's struggling with.
Well,
that's what we can't give.
Okay. I don't think that's the case. I think you can lose your comp claim, your comp case, and I think you can win your bad faith.
Let's say she's not entitled to any comp.
Okay.
And if the company, she makes a demand and they tell her immediately, by return mail, you're entitled to nothing. She has no claim if she doesn't win the comp.
If she loses her comp case, she gets no comp benefits.
And if the company correctly analyzed she was going to lose the comp case and they just said no immediately, then she's got no claim. Right?
Well, she has a claim, but she may lose it. The decision of the commission is evidence as to whether or not the carrier breached the duty of good faith and fair dealing, and I'm referring to the Crow case. That's just one piece of evidence.
Well, what are you complaining that this comp carrier did?
I'm complaining.
That was so egregious, other than deny the claim.
Well, we're complaining because the doctors were saying that she needed medical treatment. The adjuster said, we're not going to pay it because we think that she had an injury that preexisted the date of the accident. We don't think that they
but
did.
But that's something that the Workers' Compensation Board has got to resolve, isn't it?
No. They resolve whether or not she's entitled to benefits, and they can say no. But that doesn't resolve the other part of the claim, if you will, the bad faith claim. The bad faith claim is not dependent on what the administrative board or commission decides.
Can a court make any underlying factual determination that's contrary to what the comp administrative system has decided?
Yes. You can have a conflict between
the
two.
You go all through comp and get nothing, and a court can say, well, you should have gotten a lot. The comp system messed this up. You should have gotten a lot of money, so that's bad faith.
I don't know about a lot of money, but the judicial decision on the bad faith claim, I say, in my opinion, can differ from a denial of a comp claim. And the reason for that is that you have different rules, you have different standards, and you have a difference in judges, you have a difference in evidence. All of that goes in to come up with a result. It's easier to present whatever evidence may exist in a comp case than it is in a bad faith case. To me, it's a difference in standards between two administrative or judicial tribunals. To give you an example, O.J. Simpson, he tried twice. Criminal court, he was acquitted. Civil court, they found that he was liable. Same basic set of facts, but different results. And the same thing applies in this situation.
But there's no exhaustion of remedies for O.J.
Well, that may be true. But my point is, and the Montgomery case that's cited here, I think, says that the commission is not set up to handle bad faith claims, and they're not. That's, you know, it's clear that they don't have jurisdiction. So you can't exhaust your administrative remedy. There is no remedy for the bad faith
claim. You agree that a bad faith claim has to be predicated upon an obligation flowing through ruling, in other words, an obligation of owing benefits.
Let me restate it along the lines of what the petitioner said. She says that entitlement to benefits is a prerequisite to a cause of action for bad faith.
I disagree with that for the reasons that I've stated. I don't think you have to win before the commission. And the reason that you can have different results and the reason that you don't have to win before the commission is, number one, you have a non-lawyer who is making the decision. At the Benefit Review Conference, BRC, you have an officer who makes a decision in an informal conference based on whatever information is provided to him. Goes up.
There's an appeal from that.
That's right. You go to the CCH level. You have an administrative officer who may or may not be an attorney. There are no rules of evidence, really, that govern that proceeding. And pretty much anything comes in. There are no objections to the testimony, hearsay. You can pretty much say whatever you want to. So you get a different result there than you would if that same evidence were presented in court.
Mr. Daniel, let me ask you a question. I'm not sure I understand your position. You have made a claim, bad faith on the part of the insurance company. Is your claim predicated on the notion that you filed a claim with the insurance company and they refused it, And that is the essence of your bad faith claim. It was just so reasonably clear that they should not have refused it. Is that your point?
Yes, I think that's what
so
we're saying.
Irrespective of the comp scheme, which sets up a mechanism for resolving a dispute between the injured party and the carrier on the question of whether the claim is covered, you think that our Giles opinion and Aranda set up a separate avenue for a party to go to if they disagree with the insurance company's denial of the claim?
That's probably a better way of stating it, and I'm going back to the duty to investigate and reasonably clear Giles thing.
In this case, you're not arguing that the denial was unreasonably delayed. You're arguing simply they denied it in the face of it being reasonably clear that the claim was covered.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. And there's two different standards, two different avenues to proceed. I don't think that the courts of this state should be subservient to the commission. I think the courts are separate. I think that the courts, and based on all of your decisions, have the obligation, they have the ability to proceed with a bad faith claim, because it's a different standard, and they proceed that avenue while the comp claim may be proceeding at the same time.
You mentioned that whatever the board might find would be evidentiary.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
you. I think you mentioned that whatever the board might find on compensability would be evidentiary in the case.
That's correct.
What harm would result if we found exhaustion of administrative remedies?
If they found exhaustion?
Was required. It wouldn't hurt your case.
I don't think it would, no.
So you'd still get to go forward in court.
You still go forward.
And,
and
they would not be deprived of a piece of evidence that they think is helpful.
They'd be the first one to point that out to the trial court to visit the jury, is that, you know, the officer ruled in our favor. And they can do it.
But if we were to rule your way, they might be deprived of being able to offer that to the jury.
I don't know that they would or would not.
Well, it could if it proceeded to trial before the commission dealt with it.
That's right. They might be deprived of being able to use that. I've seen cases where they have used a hearing officer and asked him his opinion, and he has said that, you know, in his opinion, it wasn't compensable, whatever it was.
But you would concede no harm done if exhaustion is required.
No, I don't think that.
Do you think the court should give any deference to the Railroad Commission or the Public Utility Commission?
It's yes, and I
different than the comp.
Well, you're two different remedies, and you know if a person is asking for comp benefit, I think he needs to go to the commission. She needs to go to the commission because they have a recognized body of law. They understand the Comp Act, and that's where you should go when you're asking for comp benefits. If you're not asking for comp benefits, then I think you need to be at the courthouse with a judge and a jury. And normal judicial proceedings.
So you don't even have to. You think somebody can file a Miranda claim without even ever going to the comp board? You can ask for comp and it's denied, and you don't even have to stop there. You just come to the court.
I don't know that you need. There's no prerequisite. I think it's better if you do proceed and try to go that route. But when you reach a point where it's reasonably clear, then that's a separate matter, and I think that's a matter for the courts to decide because the commission can't decide. They don't have jurisdiction, and they're not set up to do it under the Montgomery case. But I recognize that there is a body of expertise out there with the commission. And that when you're asking for comp benefits, that's probably the place to be. That's where you need to be, and that's what the law, I think, requires. But we're over here in a different situation, and we're not asking for comp benefits. There is a description of the conduct that gives rise, we say, to punitive damages, and part of that includes conduct in the handling of the claim, a denial of benefits, but we're not asking for benefits per se. We're just merely pointing out these pieces of evidence that would justify an award of punitive damage by the jury. Anybody have any other questions that I might ask?
We don't mind if you give us time back.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. Suits for bad faith in workers' comp contexts are being used to sidestep the Texas Workers' Compensation Commission and its rules and regulations.
How often do you want to go to field for that?
We believe frequently. I would say it's almost obligatory to bring a bad faith case because, and we feel that the Court of Appeals opinion in this case is wrong in three important aspects, and we think it's harmful to the proper administration of the workers' compensation system. We think number one that it determined or it characterized Ms. Fodge's pleadings as not seeking benefits, which we think a plain reading of it clearly it seeks workers' compensation benefits. We think that the court also indicated that as long as she got one ruling from TWIC, that everything else is open to being brought to court without there being any nexus between what she's seeking bad faith remedies on and what she brought to the board. Also, we feel that the opinion allows non-benefit claims related to the deprivation of benefits but arising in the claims handling process, regardless of whether she exhausts on issues that are within TWIC jurisdiction. We feel that this endangers the entire process because they merely crouch deprivation of benefits in terms of bad faith and DTPA, insurance code.
We craft a rule in bad faith litigation in the context that the bad faith litigation cannot can't proceed independently of the compensation mechanism unless the sole damages that are being sought are damages that are not affected with whether or not benefits are due and owed, essentially limiting it to slander or libel or some sort of negligence action, I guess, by an adjuster who runs over their foot or something when they're out there looking at a claim. But if we crafted a rule like that, would that be all right with the comp, with the insurers and the comp? You know clearly what we're talking about, as opposed to something like this where they're kind of mixed together.
There needs to be some clarification and some dividing. But you're getting into a quagmire there. It's not going to be an easy path. For instance, we raised the slander example. What if you have a situation where it's a back claim, as here, but that the claim is that during the claims handling process, she was so traumatized that she developed ulcers. It's a little bit removed. Or the fact that her, as in this case, she's arguing that her medical condition, the one caused by the on-the-job injury, was exacerbated.
But that's still covered by comp, isn't it?
It should be, yes.
Yeah.
And she should have
developing ulcers because of going through the claims process is still related to the benefits process, seems to me.
We would argue it is.
So exhaustion of remedies, the exhaustion of remedies doctrine really is what takes care of the situation. situation.
Yes. Well, it, we thought so too, except that we felt like the Court of Appeals.
No, I understand, but I mean, but your position is
yes.
that if the exhaustion of remedies doctrine as it exists under Texas law today were to be applied to this circumstance, and that would remedy this problem.
Yes. Yes, it would. And then the something that arises totally during the claims handling process, such as the slander, we would say that is sorely needed, some sort of clarification.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes today's arguments, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.